Right, this is not intended to be a missionary report type thing. You know, missionaries go away for 4 years and then they suddenly appear back on the scene and they have stories of what they're doing and how they're doing it and how the Lord is blessing and what the problems are and all of those things. And we start to try and get a feel of what it's like to be a missionary. And you know, some people I think have the idea that missionaries are sort of special people. They're not. And in fact, those of you who have visited missionaries on the field will know that they're really very ordinary people doing the ordinary type of things that you do in everyday life back here at home. The only thing is that there might be a little bit more involved in with people and with the preaching of the gospel. But they're ordinary people, just like any of us here. You know, they're not special, highly spiritual people. We're just ordinary people. So what we want to do today is we want to have a look at some of the broader aspects of what missions involves. One of the things that we've discovered since being involved in foreign missions has been the magnitude of what God is doing around the world. If you could catch a vision of some of the things that God is doing in various places all around the world, it would thrill your heart. It would cheer you up because you would see the hand of God moving in so many different ways. Here in Australia, we recognize that it's a hard field. And we tend to think, you know, that we don't see great revivals and we don't see a great deal of what God is doing. But you know, in many mission fields, it's just exactly the same. And yet in others, there seems to be a real moving of the Spirit of God, and God is at work. And it's exciting, really, to see the vastness of what God is doing all around the world in bringing men and women to Christ. We were thinking this morning about the unchangeableness of God. But you know, there are millions of people out there whose concept of God is as a God who changes. In Albania today, 3 years ago, it was basically an atheistic country. Today, it's a Muslim country. And the Muslim people, their God is a God who changes. He's a God who, because he is supreme, has the liberty to change his mind. He has the liberty to change his character if he wants to. And they have no firm foundation upon which to base any kind of belief. Because God can be one thing today and another thing tomorrow. And there are millions of people who are blinded by that. Now what we want to do today is we've got a number of people here who have, in one way or another, been involved in foreign missions. And of course, it's a big mission field here at home. This is the prime mission field for us, isn't it? Right here at home. This is the prime responsibility that God's given to us here. But there are those too who have been working overseas. And we've got Eunice Rhodes, who's been working in Zaire. We've got ourselves, who've been working in Albania. And we've got Daniel and Matthew, who have a different reason to look at missions. We've got our own children. We've got Bronwyn and Ruth, who are just about to set out to a foreign country to try and to serve the Lord. And we've got others, and we'll go through them as we go. What I want to do is just to give each one about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, however long they want, to tell us a little bit about themselves and the work that they've been doing. We'll do that first. Then we'll try and pick up on a couple of different aspects of it and how it affects people, and then we'll just take questions. If you want to direct a question to any one of these people, then we'll take the opportunity to question them. And you can question about anything that you want in relation to the work that they're doing. We're not here to get into theologies today. But we do want, you know, if you're interested to know how they handle the situation or what problems they've found, then that'll be your opportunity. So I think we'll start with Eunice. If Eunice would like to give us some time, and then we'll just go on.
Right, that's a map. This is a map of Africa. As you can see, some people seem to have a misconception of where Zaire is. It's here in the middle. This country here with Zambia just below it. Rwanda, Burundi is in this area. The part where I work is just down in here. So we're not really near to Rwanda and Burundi. And South Africa, of course, is way down the bottom. So we're some thousands of kilometres from there. Now, a lot of people, because of the chaos that's over there, seem to think that it's rather a scary place to work. But this is the sort of reaction that I've had from people since I've been home. But quite frankly, I find it more scary living in Australia and having to cross roads that are full of traffic and all these sorts of things than living over in Zaire. I guess, too, there's something else to that, too. Even when there's political chaos, those of us who've been through it know experientially the keeping power of God. And he does, even when we do silly things, as we do. In the days when I went out 27 years ago, there were about 11 missionaries at Bunkaya. Now I'm the only missionary there. This means, of course, that the national Christians have to buck in and do a lot of the work themselves, and that's good, and they like doing it. But they are needing a lot of teaching, a lot of help, and we've been seeking to do something in that regard by this last dry season. Instead of going out into conferences, we've been translating into the local language. Commentary on Acts, actually. And while I've been home, I've been getting that translation prepared for printing, and we hope to have it printed this year. So that we hope that this will be something to help them in teaching them something of the Word of God. We've had no man missionary there now since 78 to give them Bible teaching, and this has been quite a concern. Here in Australia, you might wonder why they can't do it themselves, but here in Australia you have so many helps. You have conferences like this one. You have many books to help you. Over there we have only a handful of books in the local language, and so we're seeking to rectify that in some measure to help these folks. Now, I think that maybe my... Well, a little bit more. This year, one of the reasons why we didn't go out to conferences was that we had a bad cholera epidemic. A number of our Christians died in it. The principal of our high school died with it. And we could not, under those circumstances, gather people together in a group, in a conference. And so that was one reason. The other reason was that our wet season was not a good one last year. And so food was short. We couldn't provide food for a group together. And this year, the wet season seemed to start well, and then it dried up. Well, it may have come on again now, and I certainly hope so that people can have crops this time, this wet season. They are mainly subsistence farmers, and so they're very dependent on what they can grow for something to for food to eat, and things of that sort. So, for their livelihood. Basically, our people just trade in the extra food that they grow, and that's the only livelihood they have. So these things are important to them. I'm going to leave it there now, and let the others have a chance, and you can come up with any questions later.
Okay, thank you, Eunice. Of course, my name's Dave McGrail, and our family, we've been serving the Lord in Albania. We went out from here 4 years ago, and we actually went into Albania 3 years ago after the communist government collapsed there. And our situation in Albania was like going into a new field. There were no other missionaries there. There were no Christians there. There were no facilities there at all, and it was really like going into... Hello. Those of you who have to go and put down your tent, tighten up the string. Yeah. we've got to put it back. It's a new field where there'd be no history of evangelical work at all, and this in itself created some problems. For example, when we first went into Albania, we didn't have the full Bible translated. We had the New Testament. And you're going into an atheistic people who have no concept of what God is like. You know, we've been thinking a lot about what God is like, but if you, some of you young people of your age, by the time you're 17, there's been three generations go through the Albanian schooling system being grilled with the fact that God does not exist. There is no God. So you have no concept of what God is like. And, you know, we had to decide where we're going to start and how you go about teaching the scriptures to people who have absolutely no concept of what God is like. Albania, we found it to be a very difficult field to get started, and even to live, to do anything in Albania in those early days was extremely difficult, and even to get enough food into the country to survive on. The Albanian people had no food, and we had to get food brought in. And you go about, we sit here and we sing hymns out of a hymn book, but you know, when we went into Albania, there wasn't one single song translated into the Albanian language. So where do you start with your hymn singing? And all of these things, these are things that we had to face. Today, after 3 years, we're thankful that the Lord is blessing Albania. And it's not because of the work of the missionaries. I think it's partly because of the fact that Albania was Satan's stronghold, and God has claimed it back, or is claiming it back. And when we look at the statistics of foreign missionaries who are currently working in Albania, it's way out of proportion to the rest of Eastern Europe, for example. There's something like 400 missionaries working in Albania with a population of 3 million people, and you look at places like these Russian states that have broken off, where they might have 10 million people and not one missionary, you know? So God is blessing in Albania at the moment, and it was our privilege in that first year. It was like Acts all over again. It was really exciting to see people coming to the Lord. They wouldn't come easily. They would come with a questioning mind, and they would come with question after question after question, but eventually through the reading of God's Word, the New Testament that they had, they would read it, and the Holy Spirit would convict them and they would be saved. And that was really exciting. The last 2 years has been more of a consolidation time for us, for the work there, and it's slowed down a lot and there's become a lot more opposition and a lot more difficulties. But we found being involved in missions, a mixture of excitement, it's been a mixture of encouragement, it's been a mixture of discouragement. And you have to learn to cope with all of these things. Now, we're not here to talk about Albania. We're here to try and get a broader picture of what's involved in missions. You know, there are many, many ways of which you can serve the Lord at home here or even abroad. And some people go to preach the gospel. That's their main aim, to see people saved. Other people go with a different priority in their work. And some people just happen to get landed with it. And we've got here with us today a number of people who have been landed with this business of missions. And I'm going to ask Daniel, he's one of them, if he would just give his impression of what it's like to have to be the child of a missionary. Daniel wasn't particularly called to go to Colombia, it was his parents. But it's affected his life. And so what we want to do is try and find out how it affects the lives of others and how they get on and the problems and the encouragements that they face along the way.
That was a pretty bad deal, didn't it?
Excuse me, Daniel. Will you come in the middle? Thank you.
Okay. When you're what you call an MK, which I'm not sure if it means a missionary kid or a monkey kid. I'll tell you about that later. You don't get called. That's the first thing. Your parents are called, and your parents go out, and because you're a child of your parents, you get taken. So that means that you leave your country, you leave your grandparents, you leave your aunties, your uncles, your cousins, your friends, your language, your culture, and that 5 or 6 or 7, because of no reason, you're in a totally different environment. Are you getting sad for me? I don't bear a grudge about having gone across the Columbia. Actually, I give thanks to God every day for the opportunity, for the privilege of being in a different environment and seeing a different work done. We went out in, my parents went out, and I did too, and Matthew, my brother, in 1981. I was 6, Matthew was 4, and my sister was 2. The big problem was learning the language. Now, my mum and dad went to study language for 9 months. They studied Spanish, and my brother, my sister, and myself, we learned the language, picking it up from other people. That was a real trial in itself. I can't remember this, but mum used to say that I'd go out into the street to play with other children, and I'd come back inside and I'd be crying, frustrated, because I couldn't speak. You can't speak. You can't tell anybody what you're feeling. You can't ask a question. You need something, you need something to eat, you need the bathroom. I suppose you get the sign, you know, the message pretty quick, but you know, just the basic things, you can't even say anything. That's something that you have to do when you're the son of a missionary. Another thing is you have a keen sense of not belonging anywhere. When I go across to Colombia, I am looked upon as a foreigner, as an Australian. When I come back to Australia, which is supposedly my home country, I find that I don't fit in and that I'm no longer 100% Australian. So it means in some ways I don't have a country. And you feel very unsettled sometimes. Very unsettled. You don't know what you should be doing. You don't know what you should be saying. Like just coming back to Australia and seeing people that were your friends. And over in Colombia, it's the tradition, it's the culture to, if you've got a good friend, to give him a hug. And I see people, you know, that I saw a couple of years ago, and they come along to, oh. So it's a lot of little things, right? That you have to learn to live with. But I thank God every day. You can ask questions later on. I thank God every day for the privilege that I've had. And that I might keep on having to be seeing the work in another country.
Okay, thank you. We might carry on with some other missionary kids, because I think you know, it's interesting to get the various insights. So I'll ask Anya. Anya came with us to Albania, but she was probably a little bit older than you, so I'll just get Anya to give her impressions and what it's meant to her to be dragged all over the world.
I think I found it very hard as well when my parents decided to go overseas, although I think I really did get to the point before we left where I felt that it was something that the Lord wanted us to do as a family. And I think I had peace in my heart before we went. And I also thank the Lord for the opportunity that we've had to just to see God at work in such a larger scale, and to just get such big, so much bigger impressions of what is going on in the world. I think probably the hardest thing to come to grips with is, like Daniel says, just to not know where is home. We sold up everything here, and so when you come home, there's nothing to come back to. And when you go overseas, as Daniel said, you're foreigners, and you have no friends, you can't speak. I think that's the hardest thing in another country, in a foreign country. I think just like practical things, our schooling, it was all out of whack, so all of a sudden you're losing 6 months here and gaining 6 months there and things like this, and it really, it can mess you around a lot. This morning when Paul was speaking about our unchanging God, it just struck me that that's what I had to come to, that although we have perhaps very little stability on this earth, yet we trust in an unchanging God, and that's what gives us our stability in the faith. And I just thank God, because if it wasn't for that, I think we'd be the most unsettled people on this earth. But he's been good to us, and I think the greatest blessings for me, having seen the work, is to see the joy and the thankfulness in the heart of new believers. I've seen people who have never heard a thing about God or have been taught against God all their lives, and yet all of a sudden they've come to love him and to appreciate him so much, and you just realise that they can teach us more than we can teach them, that they have their first love, which we so quickly lose when we are so into a routine and into a normal assembly life and things like that. These people just simply love the Lord. I think from a cultural point of view, it's been a great blessing to me to just see and learn to relate to people from other cultures. Just to realise that we're not normal people, so to speak. We've got one culture, they've got another culture, and for them that's home, that's how they think. And it's just good to be able to see the way different people think and do different things, so that's been really good. I think probably the hardest thing for me was coming back to start university. I came back on my own in the first year and spent the last 3 years away from my family. And the Lord has provided people and things in so many ways that I don't feel that I've missed out in one way, but in another way there are years that you can't make up when you've been away, and I think that's been hard. But I think, on the whole, it's just a great blessing to see what God's doing, and that he's still a living and an active God. He's not just some silent creature, he's not some silent being far away, but he's active and he's working in the lives of his people all around the world, and it's been a blessing for me.
Okay, let's move on, and I've asked Andrew if he'd give us some insights into how it's been for him. He's been away for a year now in England, serving the Lord there, and we just want to get his thoughts on how it's been in his life.
I suppose I don't need to tell any of you that I'm not a missionary. I went overseas because the Lord told me to, but I had no idea and no intention of doing, I wouldn't say no intention, but no plans, definite plans for doing any work for the Lord so much as to tell anybody about it. It was even as bad as this. I resigned from my job and I had a 2-week wait before I left my job, and I had no plans what I would do after that. And people said, what are you going to do? What job are you going to? And I said, don't know. And people would look at you a bit blankly. And I started even suggesting, well, I might go overseas. And that was just an excuse, really, something to say so that people would leave you alone. Because in my heart, Paul said, I can't remember what it was, a couple of days ago, going overseas for a year is the thing to do if you're a young person. And there are loads and loads of Australians and New Zealanders doing European circuits. And to me, that's not Christian, having a holiday overseas, working, having fun, and so on. Maybe I'm being too critical of people. I shouldn't be saying negative things. That was my position and my opinion. And I'd always said to myself, I'm not going to go overseas to England or to Ireland, and I've got a lot of relatives over there and a lot of reasons to go over there for 2 weeks or so, but you don't see anything. If I go, I'd go for a year or so. And in my heart of hearts, I knew that I'd never do that because I didn't feel right about it to do this sort of overseas trip. So I had absolutely, absolutely no intention of going overseas to England with 2 weeks of my job to run out. But on the first day, in fact, I was praying during those 2 weeks to the Lord, Lord, please show me what you want me to do. Because I knew it was the Lord's will to get out of my job. And the Lord, I asked the Lord, please show me before I get out of here so I can tell people. But the Lord didn't say anything. And by the time I'd left work, I didn't expect the Lord would be really saying anything anyway. I thought I'd just be sort of hanging off a cloud. And the very first day I was off work, the Lord quite clearly and plainly directed me to go over to England. And I had complete peace of mind about it, and I went, and I did not have the faintest intention of what I was going to do over there. I'm a British citizen, so I thought I can work. I'm going to go over to Northern Ireland and visit all my relatives for a month at Christmas, so I know that I'll be doing that. Apart from that, I can always come back. I left enough money in my bank account at home so I could buy a return ticket, but I had no idea really at all what I was going to do. And I went over there. I had my first 3 days in London booked into a hotel, and I didn't really know what I was going to be doing after that. But just before I went over, a relative of mine in England, actually I should say why I sort of went over to England, as opposed to Northern Ireland. You see, all my people and my relatives are over in Northern Ireland, and I knew the Lord had told me to go over there, but where particularly? And to my mind, it's like this. In Northern Ireland, you have assemblies upon assemblies upon assemblies everywhere, and there are full-time workers galore. They have conferences, and they get the full-time workers to sit up on the stage. They have 30 full-time workers up on the stage. It's like the cabinet sitting up in the front of a political conference. Now, you have got 1.5 million people in Northern Ireland, and you have got 40 or so full-time workers, but you've got 50 million people just across the sea, and there's no work at all being done for God. You've got a city of 10 million people, London, and there's nothing being done for God. It's absolute wasteland spiritually. Nothing at all. The same with the rest of England. It's absolutely wiped out spiritually. And I said, I'm not going to Northern Ireland. I'd just be sitting there sponging it all in. If I'm going to go overseas, and the Lord's told me to go overseas, I'll go to somewhere where there's got to be something done. So I went to London, but I said, I'm not going to London, Lord. I hate cities. I've seen some of London's Midland cities, and they are very, very depressing places. And I thought, I'll go to London for the first 3 nights. I'll go on a quick week's tour of the south coast of England, the nice part of England, and I'll see if there's anywhere along there. Maybe the Lord will say, stop here. And I had no intention of being in London either. And London is a very depressing place. London is the same size as Sydney, except it's got 3 times as many people in it, in the same area. And they're all cramped into terraces. Now, if you go down to the very, very centre of Sydney, that's 100 years old or so, you'll see what London is like just about all the way through. And it's not even as nice as some of the inner city parts of Sydney. And it's only once you really get out in the countryside that England becomes really beautiful. Inside in the cities, it's disgusting. But I had no intention of being in London either. But just before I went over, I got a letter out of the blue from a relative of mine who I'd never met, who lived in southern England, who heard from another relative of mine that I was coming over, and she wrote me a letter, and she suggested some assemblies that she had heard I might be in London, and she suggested some assemblies around about where I might be. So I didn't pay any attention to that. I thought that was very kind of her, and quite amazing, really remarkable that she should write to me. But then just the very Sunday before I came away, we had our Sunday school prize giving, and I was putting the names on my Sunday school prizes for my class of boys. And I always get into this trap, but I started reading through all the books again. And I started reading a biography of Hudson Taylor. And I got up to the point in his life when he was in London, studying medicine. And when Hudson Taylor was in London for 2 years studying medicine, he went up to an assembly called Brook Street Chapel in Tottenham. And I looked at that and I thought, that's one of those assemblies on that letter. And I thought, but Hudson Taylor was there in 1851. That's 150 years ago. Is that assembly still around? I thought, I'll go and ask Dad. And I went up and said, hey, look at this. I wonder if that's the same place as on that letter. And Dad said, yeah, I was there when I was studying medicine in London too. And so the Lord, quite circumstantially, quite circumstantially, directed me to go to this place. Now, I did not take that as God's guidance. I did not. I just filed it away in my mind for when I got over there. And I had nowhere else to go anyway. And the place where I had booked in to stay the first 3 nights wasn't very far from there either. And I went on this week's tour of the south of England, and I went into an English assembly. Now, the only assembly I knew was by hearsay, and it was quite a nice assembly. But I went in there, and they didn't read my letter. In fact, some places in England, even the stricter assemblies, they just don't bother. But I thought that was pretty rude. But anyway, but like, they hadn't even announced you were there. But what was worse than that, I was staying with some people and they were very, very kind to me. But the rest of the people in the assembly, there would have been 50, they hardly even looked at you. They were very, very cold and reserved. And I found that as standard throughout southern English assemblies, the people, it's not that they're rude, they're reserved. They're very, very reserved and shy. And they won't go out of their way to make you feel welcome. Now, that was a real shock to my system. In fact, I was helping at a week of children's meetings in an assembly not far from where I was. And there were some others from other assemblies there, and I was playing the organ for the week, and I was quite involved. And some of the other brethren there throughout the whole week didn't even shake my hand. That's how reserved some of them are. And that's the standard way. However, I went along to this assembly that I'd been sort of thinking about, and I believe the Lord led me to, and it was completely different. The believers there were really warm and friendly, and they really took me in. And I decided to stay, of course. And I didn't have any plans. I didn't really know what I was going to do, and I didn't really have anything to say to the people there. Are you over for a holiday? And I said, well, not really. Oh, you're over to work. Well, I'll just see. And I didn't really have any answers, as I didn't know. And there are two full-time workers in this place. Now, Tottenham is inner city London, really. It's very heavily Jamaican, and you've got Kurds there. It's the first stopping point for all people coming into England as refugees, and it has about 150 different ethnic groups, and it's a very, very Other English people would say Tottenham. It's a very, very frightening place to a lot of English people. Now, it's not too bad. I had some race riots there in 1985 on a big estate that had forever left their impression on English people's minds, where a policeman was macheted to death. But it's not really that bad. It's a very inner-city place, though. However, there were two full-time workers in that assembly, only a small assembly, and they asked me to play the organ for them at a children's mission they were having after I had been there about a month. And they hadn't heard me play the organ before. And I think they were just trying to get me to come and help them, really, looking back on it. So anyway, I started helping them with children's missions, just doing odd jobs that need to be done, helping them with door knocking, visitation tracts and stuff like that. And the Lord just kept me at that for the whole year I was there, really, apart from being over in Northern Ireland for a month, as I had already booked. And I learned a terrible lot. I had a lot of free time as well, in which time I did a lot of study, which I really appreciated the time for. And it was really just a period of training more than anything else. When I had gone over, the Lord quite clearly said to me, it's for a time and I want you to return. And the Lord said, the time's up, come home. And so I did. Just one thing about, one or two more things. Firstly, one of the worst thing I felt over there was, personally, was loneliness. You'd think you couldn't get lonely in a place like London, but if you're in a city of 9 million people and you don't know one of them, it gets lonely. And the Lord really remarkably provided friendships. Now, I'm the sort of shy person that doesn't make friends easily, but first of all, the Lord had John there for 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks a month, and that was the first few weeks I was there. I was in an evangelical hostel for students. Now, none of the students, or very few of them, were Christians. But there was one really, really bright Christian there. And the very first morning I sat down to breakfast, we realised we were both Christians. And the Lord provided a friend in him that I had during the 6 months I was at that hostel. And then one of those two full-time workers was quite young too, and we did a terrible lot together, and I really got to know him. And so the Lord provided friends that overcame that loneliness. I had Anya and Vincent there for 3 days on their way back from Albania to Australia, and the night that I said goodbye to Anya and Vincent, I felt really rotten. It was about 10 o'clock at night and I wasn't able to go out and see them off to the plane the next morning, and I had to walk about half an hour through the dark at 10 o'clock back to where I was staying that night. I said goodbye and I felt, oh, get me out of here, so bad, seeing that people that you know, even, you know, really well, seeing them go and leave you behind. And it's a real big thing. And I tell you what, whenever I saw a letter come in through the door of the house with red and blue striping around the outside of it, I'd tear down the stairs and rip it open, something from home. And when I was up here 2 years ago, John Skinner said to write to missionaries. I tell you, it is something, you wouldn't believe how much people appreciate it. You wouldn't believe it. It is really, really good to get news from people at home, even if they tell you the most stupid, irrelevant things. Just to know that someone's thinking of you and writing to you, it is really, really good. And when Bronwyn and Ruth go overseas, I'm sure it'll be the same for them. And when I say write to them, please do it. They won't appreciate too much more than your fellowship just in doing that when they're overseas. And just one other thing, and this is what I sort of referred to before, and it's a bit negative, about concentration of work in different areas. As far as I'm concerned, as you look at the world today, you see millions and millions of people compressed into big cities. And what work is being done for God in cities like that? And then, maybe I shouldn't put it like this, but the on the other hand, you have glamour spots. And all the attention and missionary enterprise and effort goes into them. The flavour of the month, or this 6 month, is Albania. Now, in all the English missionary magazines, and I spoke to Dave about this, he was there before all the attention focused on Albania, and he was there, was the Lord sent him there. But everyone's talking about Albania. All the Bible teachers are flocking to Albania now, all the part-timers from England, jumping on the back of the bandwagon. And maybe I shouldn't judge people, I probably shouldn't, but there is great need in a lot of cities in this world that have got 15 million people, nearly some of them. 15 million people. Now, London is absolutely wasted spiritually. There used to be, 50 years ago, over 100 assemblies in London, and there wouldn't be 25 there now, and those assemblies were massive. I was shown to a hall that seated 800, and they could open shutters at the back and put in another 200, and they used to have that place filled Sunday morning. And the elders used to have to tell people to put their name on a piece of paper and slip it in a box as they went out the door. And that place closed a year ago. And it's the same all the way through the English assemblies. The inner city evangelistic situation is dying rapidly. And what's being done about it? Maybe we should be burdened about it. Now, one other really good thing is that over there the Lord is raising up workers and he's sending forth labourers to meet those needs. And we should pray that. We've got a responsibility to pray that the Lord would send forth labourers into the harvest. And he's doing that. I saw it when I was over there. The Lord's raising up people to work for him over there, which is really good. And if we can't do anything else, we should pray that, because the Lord will do it and he'll meet those needs.
Thanks, Andrew. I think we should stop here and have some questions. We've had Eunice and Daniel and Anya and a few others. So let's just see if we've got any questions. If you've got a question for a particular person, then direct it to that particular person. Otherwise, we can farm it out. But are there any questions? Just of any general nature in regard to missions? No?
One thing I can't seem to understand is how you make the decision to go overseas on the evaluating the decision between whether to work in Australia or work overseas when there is so much work to do here. What makes you choose to go overseas?
Well, as a young Christian, I used to tell the Lord, "Lord, I'll do your service as long as you keep me in Australia. I don't want to go overseas." And I had a list of priorities, actually, that if he did send me overseas, well, Africa was the last on the list of priorities. So perhaps God has a sense of humour in sending me there, I don't know. But there came a time when I happened to be at a missionary camp. And there was, it wasn't anything that was said particularly at that missionary camp. It was my own private quiet time. And the Lord, I was reading in Jeremiah in the first chapter, and the Lord really spoke to me about my willingness to do whatever he would have for me to do. And that morning, I was just before him until he brought me to that position of being willing to do whatever he would tell me and to go wherever he would send me. That time I did not know that he would call me into his service or to do missionary work. So far as I knew, I was just going back to my secular occupation in Brisbane and the usual activities in the assembly. But he did speak to me very, very strongly about my willingness to do whatever he told me to do, to go wherever he sent me to go.
This opens up other aspects of this question of guidance that we were talking about, and we don't really want to open up that question, but I think it comes through a still small voice. I think it comes through a prompting of the Holy Spirit upon your soul, and it comes in the way that the Lord leads you. And you know, I don't know whether Paul's going to touch it later on again on guidance, but this is a different kind of guidance. This is something that the Lord puts on you. And it's a burden that the Lord places upon you. And I think that the question of obedience is, Andrew raised a good question, a good point there when he said, Lord, I don't want to go to the city. And one thing that we've had to learn, and it's been some hard lessons, is that you never lay down the ground rules to God. Because if you make the rules, God's going to test you, and that's a point that he's going to work on you. That's what we found. That it's a dangerous thing to say to the Lord, I will never do that. Because he'll find a way to make you do it. Any other questions? Well, we'll move right along. Because we've got, there's other aspects of this too, there's different, this thing, it affects different people in different ways. And I don't know, I'm just going to ask Marilyn to give us a perspective of what it's like to be a missionary wife and mother. You know, we sometimes think that missionary work is glamorous. No, I haven't found anything glamorous about being a missionary, let me tell you that. But how does it affect the wife and mother? So we'll ask Marilyn to give us her thoughts on that.
I'll just be very brief too. In some ways, I have found not a lot of difference to when we were just living back here. In that, back here, we had the same attitude that your whole life was a service to the Lord. So if people turned up on your doorstep, you helped and took them in. Or if you were out taking Bible in schools or Sunday school or meetings. And this was just a continuation of that sort of thing when we got to Albania. So in some respects, there wasn't a lot of difference. But in other respects, there was a big difference because you have to face so many other things, as the others have mentioned, culturally and with the language. And I think for me, the hardest thing was just being separated as a family. That was really very difficult. But when you're there, you have, I think, a greater burden than you do here, even though your attitude is that you're serving the Lord, and you are, because you feel the responsibility and the burden of the work, of the responsibility that God has given you so much more, heavily, I think. As I say, the most difficult thing was to be without the children, and at times to be without David for 3 months at a time. All things that you wouldn't ever wish for or have planned. And as David says, we've found really that the Lord has tested you on every point that you have thought you've believed. You say, I'm never moving, I'm never going there, and that's exactly the point the Lord will take you up on. So I don't know if anyone has any questions either, but that's really all I have to say.
Well, we've got a couple of young women here who are about to embark overseas. I don't know whether, is this your first time going overseas? No? Well, we'll ask, first of all, we'll ask Ruth. Ruth will come and, you thought you were going to be second. Well, okay, well, B comes before us, so we'll take Bronwyn. Bronwyn, would you like to just share with us, how you got to this point of feeling that the Lord wanted you to go to Zambia, and tell us a little bit about, what you've got in mind and how it's all going to work.
Okay, well, for those that don't know. Okay, well, for those who don't know, Ruth and I are going to Zambia. We're leaving on the 16th of February. There's quite a few things I could say about what brought me to this decision, but I'll just be brief. I've always been interested in missionary work. I've had lots of exposure to missionaries. My uncle was a missionary in Nepal. I've always read missionary books ever since I was a kid. There's never been any other sort of choice for me other than Africa. I can't really give a reason why. I just know that Africa's always been my interest ever since I was a little kid. Mum said she remembered me telling her that I was going to deliver back babies in Africa when I was only little. So I've really got no explanation for that. That's just something that's always been on my mind and something that's always been there. I'll just give you a bit of a background on my career and having on my career path and how that's affected this decision. When I was at school, I wanted to be a physiotherapist, and so when I did my HSC, I put that to the top of the form, and I had about four or five different other things. I had occupational therapy, social work, lots of different things, and I didn't even have nursing on my list. I didn't get into physio, and I was going to do occupational therapy, and then a week before the form has to finally be in, I just all of a sudden had this sudden impulse that I should put down nursing, and I didn't know why, but I did it. I believe it was God telling me to do that now. At the time, I wasn't quite sure what was happening, but I put down nursing. I got into nursing. I studied it for 3 years, then I got a job at Illawarra Regional Hospital in Wollongong, and I worked in the coronary care unit for 3 years. And throughout that time, probably at the back of my mind when I actually did nursing, was missionary work was still at the back of my mind, because, as I said, I've always been thinking of it. And then a couple of years ago, I thought, well, you know, I've got some experience now, maybe I should be thinking of writing away to a few people and seeing what I should do. And then about 12 months ago, I was up here at the farm and I was talking to Ruth, and unbeknownst to me, she had the same sort of thoughts. We didn't really know until we talked to each other, so we decided that, well, together we'd write away to a few different people and see what sort of responses we got. So I wrote to a hospital in South Africa, Murchison Hospital, and Ruth wrote to one in Zaire. We wrote to quite a few different places. I heard back from the one in South Africa, and they said that they couldn't have us there for various reasons, one of them being that you needed to know the language. And at this stage, we were only thinking of going for 12 months. And then Ruth applied to do a French course, because to go to Zaire, you should really know a bit of French. In Zambia, English is actually the national language. But then... you might remember about 6 or 7 months ago there was an article in Tidings written by Bethany Saxby, Saxby's parents, when they'd been over there last year. And in that article it sort of said at the bottom how much you needed nurses over there, and to me that was sort of the answer to all our questions. I knew straight away that's where I was supposed to be going. And then I talked to Ruth and she had exactly the same feeling, so we decided to make plans. Another thing too, about a couple of years ago, I was just reading my Bible, and that verse that says in Matthew, the verse about the harvest being plentiful and the labourers few, really jumped out at me, but I sort of pushed it to the back of my mind. It's amazing how you can sort of not think about things when it's not convenient. So anyway, I think that's about all I have to say, really.
Hey, Ruth.
I don't really think I've got much else to say. Yeah, I'm still amazed at how similar our stories actually are. Again, just the interest in Africa from way back, and just God's leading in our careers and things like that, and spiritually as well. A few, you know, decisions and things like that that I've had to make anyhow in the last few years that's drawn me a little bit closer to the Lord, and just to seek His will in my life. One thing that I've always noticed, like working in places I've been working, like in large hospitals, is, and probably in the job I've been doing too, in accident and emergency, you just don't get to really be much of a witness to your patients and to the people you're in contact with. The need is definitely there, but the opportunity doesn't always arise, and just hopefully you know, next year we might be able to make a little bit more impact in what we're actually doing as far as our you know, our nursing goes. I mean, we're of use here, but nursing in Australia is like, there's hundreds and thousands of nurses here. Where we're going, there's like two nurses in a 200-bed hospital, and the need is just amazing. As far as knowing it was God's will that I went, again, a lot of it is circumstantial. The interest goes back a long way, but over the last 2 years, I have on and off been keeping a prayer journal, which has been a really big help to me in knowing, like looking back and knowing and just seeing God leading in lots of different ways. Again, just things being brought to my attention at certain times in my life and having to make decisions. It's just like encouraged me to rely more on God and leave the comforts of home and comforts of and security of just working here in Australia and the support we have here and going somewhere else where we do have to rely totally on God for, you know, so many of the things that we'll be having to do. I really can't say much else apart from what Bronwyn's covered, most of the actual, you know, run up to what we've been doing in the last little while as far as riding away. We have both written away to quite a few different places, as you said. We've heard back from many people and the need is amazing everywhere. And going back to Jeff's question, as in, you know, why go over there when there's so much need here? It is a very personal thing, and it does come back to like getting a peace with where you should be going and where you should be. We're not going at this stage anyhow. We're leaving it up to God to direct us, but it's not something we're going to do forever, unless, you know, that's how we feel after, you know, after the time. We've been requested, me and the ones over there have actually asked us to stay for 18 months just to help. They'll be taking 6 months each furlough and while we're there. So we really do realise that there's a need, and where there's such a need and we might be able to be of some use, we've felt that just to go in God's, you know, care. He's with us. He's promised to go before us and to be with us and for us not to be afraid and just to trust in Him in everything we do. So basically that's all we're doing, and I'm sure we'll be able to tell you a lot more when we come home.
Okay, are there any questions for Bronwyn and Ruth? Now's a good time to see where they're going. You don't know exactly where you're going, and you do or you don't. Tell us where you're going.
We're going to Zambia, which is just the country down below where Eunice is there, to a little mission station called Chitokoloki. It's probably about 700 kilometres from the next large city, so it's quite remote and quite rural.
And as you and you'll be basically doing nursing in the hospital.
One of the ladies is going back to Canada, and one of us will be taking over her leprosy and TB clinic. We'll be working in the hospitals as well, and pastoring some antenatal and postnatal care.
And you'll be able to do this work with the English language? You won't have to...
Oh, we will have to learn some of the local language, but most of the hospital workers can speak English. You can get away with not learning it, but we do have to learn it's Lunda is the national language, well, the local language there.
Any other questions? I just want to make a point that Ruth and Bronwyn have got a lot of friends here today. And we're at camp here with 130 of us or something. And friends. And how are we going to carry on that friendship when they're gone? That's the question. I think Andrew raised the question of letters. And it's a great ministry to be able to write and encourage people. We were talking about encouragement earlier on. Here's an opportunity for every one of you who know Ruth and Bronwyn to be an encourager. And in a year's time, if you're back here and they've got a letter here to read out from Bronwyn and Ruth, I trust that they'll be thanking us all for the encouraging letters. And it's a tremendous thing. And it it creates a burden, I must admit, because when you get these letters, you have to reply to them. And that's a big job. But it's an encouragement, and to let them know that you're praying for them. That's a tremendous thing. Another thing of encouragement that Andrew mentioned is the fact of visitors. And we've been encouraged by visitors. Is John here? Where's John? John, come up here. Or take the microphone down to John. John has visited some mission fields. He was a week in Albania, 10 days in Albania, was it, John? Some time in London and some time in Colombia. And would you like to just share with us, you know, what impression that trip made on you, and you know, what in terms of vision?
Yeah, I guess the biggest impression I got of missionary life was how boring it is. No, I mean, not from my point of view, but from their point of view. Like, I think one of them mentioned, if you want glory, definitely don't go to the mission field, because I mean, there's certainly many high spots of missionary life when they see someone saved, but just to do everyday things, it takes two or three times longer than it would here in Australia, for example. Just do paperwork in Colombia or any of these third world countries. You spend probably a week just getting your car registered, just running from one office to another. And it's so frustrating. It takes just little things daily. Things just take so long. But I guess the blessing, you know, the blessing, the spiritual blessing they see, and the peace that God gives them, that's all that keeps them there. It's not definitely not the glory from.
But from your point of view, are you the richer for having been and being an encouragement to others, or, you know, how's it affected you personally?
Well, I don't know whether I really was an encouragement, but I guess any visit from someone home is an encouragement. But yeah, the question of letters have been raised, and not only letters, but I think some of the Salisbury and Toowong ones have started to do food parcels and little items they send to various missionaries. I'd love to encourage that, because some of the letters they've had back, it'd make you cry, the appreciation. Just of someone caring enough to remember you, the missionaries.
I must say it was very encouraging to have John across there. One of the things that really I know is a bit funny wasn't funny, was that seeing John lose his camera and passport. That means that we're not the only ones. I just want to. I was remembering growing up. These are lessons you'll never have at home. One day, the mum and dad called us into their room and said, "Look, there's no food. And the money's run out. We've only got 40 cents between us." They said, "Go back to your rooms and look around and see if you can, you know, maybe find a coin in the corner, you know, anything." So we all went back to our rooms and read through the cupboards and there's nothing. So we all went into Ravindad's room and they said, okay, we're all going to kneel and we're going to pray. I was in the morning, Dad had already been down to the post office and just have another look to see. Nothing had come, no, there's nothing. So we all kneeled down and we really prayed, especially Mum and Dad. I can still picture them there praying and telling God they need for food. This is one of the big things in life. There was no petrol in the car to go anywhere else. So anyway, we all prayed and got up, and the afternoon Dad said, well, I'm going to go down to the post office today. And I said, no, don't go down to the post office. What are you going to go down? You went down this morning. He said, no, I'm going to go down for a look. So anyway, he went down. And there was a letter, and inside that letter there was a check that had been sent 2 months earlier, so that it would arrive exactly on the day when we needed it most. Does God look after us? He does. Sometimes we doubt that God can look after us. He can. He has in my life. He's looked after me. Another time when I was just 6 months ago coming back from Chippewa, and the bus I was on, the brakes went. You'd understand that, wouldn't you, John? They call them in Colombia the onion buses. They've got holes. Nothing works on them. And the drivers are really crazy bad drivers. And we're coming back. Chukwu is very isolated. It's way down in the jungle. You have to travel. It takes about 9 hours to travel 260 kilometres in. And coming on the way back, something happened with the air compressor, and on the first corner of the out of the village and a very steep area, the bus lost its brake. And so we, you know, down the mountain on one side there was a drop about 200 metres into the river below. Eventually the bus driver got the bus by putting it into the bank. And I was going with Justin Johansson and got out of the bus, and I don't think I've ever heard a more sincere prayer than Justin when he got off. He said, thank you, Lord, thank you. But looking around and seeing the petrified faces on people, that was one of the opportunities I missed in witnessing. I should have done it, and I regret it. Every time I think about it, that I didn't say anything. But there's so many little things that you can learn. Not only being in a different country, but as well here in Australia. Just little things. That's what Christianity is all about. It's not doing big things. It's doing a lot of little things. Trusting on God and walking with Him and learning from Him. That's how we're really going to appreciate His presence in our life.
Yeah, I'd like to say how much an encouragement your visit was to John. We didn't really get the chance to say it when we were there because it was a pretty tense time for us, but it was a tremendous encouragement. I think we better just wrap it up there. But let's just try and... Oh, no. I think we better wrap it up there. Time's gone. But let's just try and think of some things here. You can have 2 minutes. Here's the father of a... Here, this is what it's like to be the father of a missionary. I meant to thank you.
Yes. Yes, we...
Is it on?
Yes. Oh, sorry. We have had missionary kids, and I appreciated every word they said. We have had missionary husbands and wives, and I identify with every word they said. We have had our single sisters, and I admire them for the courage to go out on the field when some of us men have not had the courage to go out on the field. And when we had our children born, when they before or just as they were born, we prayed for them that one day God would use them, that God would save them early in life and would use them, and they would become mighty men and mighty women for God. We're now praying for our grandchildren. But the day came when our daughter married a young fellow not long saved from Maryborough. Some here would know of him, Gavin Peterson. When we first set eyes on Gavin with his long hair and his background dabbling in drugs and marijuana, and someone said, "Are you sure that you would like that fellow as a son-in-law?" We are proud in the sense that we thank God that He provided our daughter with a husband of such a caliber. The answer to our young brother's question, why do they want to go on the missionary field or to the mission field? He answered it this wise. In Australia, the Australians have had many opportunities to hear the gospel, but the people on the mission field to where they were going haven't had the opportunity to hear it once. And he's gone to a Catholic country. And that sounds strange, because they, in a measure, have the Word of God, and yet they haven't heard the gospel in the way you and I have heard it, even here at this camp. As missionary parents, and we're just new at the game, I sent Anya down to Dorothy, because I know that she'll be in tears. She'll not be able to control the fact of her emotions with me sharing what I'm sharing with you now. We had to wait 2 years or more before Janet and Gavin left the shores, farewelled them. After many farewells, we farewelled them when they first came up with the exercise and the call some 2 years ago in Brisbane, and our assembly had an assembly tea for them, and tears were shed. We farewelled them at the missionary conference when Gavin gave a report of how he was called, and many tears were shed. And I tell you, the children here have shed tears. The wives of the missionaries have shed tears. That hasn't been mentioned today. But tears were shed, not because we didn't want them to go. We prayed that God would call them and take them and make them mighty men and women of God, as we said. But it was the fact of the time was coming and we had to let go. But God had to wait 2 years, so we went through quite a few farewells until the very last one. And we had the privilege of going down to Adelaide. Lord organized a way circumstantially to get us on the... Sorry, where is our dear brother? We're somewhere anyway. But it was a wonderful set of circumstances. We got on the very same plane from Adelaide, a few seats behind them, to Sydney. Qantas allowed us to get into the international flight area so that we could go through customs with them and take an international flight to Brisbane. How do you like that? Not overseas. But we saw them get on that plane to South Africa. And the thrill was to get the first letter back, the first phone call. Then Janet wrote to us and said, "Dad and Mum, ask the Lord to supply you or provide you with a fax machine." We were streets ahead of her. We got a fax machine, a second-hand one. And mind you, with a lot of complications, getting this thing working, and I'm an Irishman, and do things back to front, so it was all the more harder for me to learn it. But when that fax came through, guess what happened? I was down in the backyard working in our workshop. I knew the sound when I picked the phone that this beep beep was a fax, and I came running up the yard. Dorothy saw me running. She locked me out. She wouldn't let me in because she wanted to read that fax first. And when we did get in, now this is the excitement you're saying of getting letters to missionaries. Think of the other way. The letters coming home from the children. Where Anya and the family here that have had to stay while their parents are overseas, those letters mean a lot. And if you have access to fax machines, use them. Access to the phone, $2 a minute. So what? Speak to them for a couple of minutes. It'll thrill their hearts if you have access, or they have access to a phone. And I'm going to confess something. You know, we never really took much interest in missionary work until our children. And our son and his wife hope to be, they're going into missionary training. Unfortunately, oh no, I shouldn't say that. They feel exercised to go through a Bible college and through missionary training that way. That's their exercise. Contrary to what we would probably wish them to do. But their exercises are eventually to head toward the Philippines. They'll be gone. We'll truly be Darby and Joan. Grandchildren gone. Children gone. But they're not gone. Because God's in control and He changes not, we heard this morning. And I just want to leave that with you. Missionary parents have hearts and emotions and feelings for their children. And we pray for them. Pray for them all the more. Harder and earnestly than we ever done before. Bob Glasgow and Heather Glasgow sent us one of their newsletters. Des, they wrote at the top of it, now that part of you is in Brazil. Now that your heart is in Brazil, we thought we ought to send you one of our newsletters. May the Lord forgive us for not being more missionary orientated than what we should have been until our own children have gone on the field. And I tell you, we're very, very much missionary conscious. Daphne Keane, we had the joy of spending a little time with her in June of last year. And through her, I went over to record a conference, something like this, at the Cameron Highlands. I tell you, it was a thrill. It warmed her heart. It warmed our hearts. And there are memories that we'll treasure till the day we die. And so the visits, like John going to Colombia, and someone else going and visiting missionaries overseas, somebody asked us, when will we be going to Brazil? I don't think we'll ever go to Brazil. We're not in that situation that we can pick up or drop everything and go to Brazil. Maybe the Lord may may give us the joy and the privilege of going over. But we don't contemplate going over. But we will constantly have our children and their children's children on our hearts. And we ask you to pray for them. Right now they're waiting, and you've just heard of the slowness of things and the way things work in Colombia. They're waiting for their goods, which are sitting on the docks for 3.5 months. And they can't have their normal household goods. Cardboard boxes for storing things and sitting things on. And yet they're entertaining the locals and they don't know the language. Can I share this with you and then I'll hand back? And it's this. They invited some of the locals for a meal. And they said, come on Thursday night in the Brazilian Portuguese. And they made it a mistake in their pronunciation, and they really said to the people, Tuesday night. And they arrived on Tuesday night. And of course, Janet hadn't prepared for them. And young Samuel opened the door in his English, Australian English. He says, hi, this is not your night. Thursday night's your night. And Janet hearing that, but she just put a little bit extra in the pot. And they all had a great time. And she says, Mum and Dad, I'm thankful they didn't understand a word of English. But they're right into it. And their desire is to witness and see souls saved and won for the Lord. Pray for them. Pray for missionary parents. Pray for missionaries' kids. Pray for them earnestly. Write to them. Yes, write to them. Fax them. Phone them. Keep them upon your hearts. And maybe we might be privileged to come back here and hear letters read. And that will be a thrill for us all, won't it? thank you for letting me have that opportunity.
And wrap it up, there's more that we could say. Irene could tell us of her experiences in being in boarding school, away in a foreign country and across the seas, away from home, and what it's like to live in a boarding school. And Matthew, I'm sure, could give us some stories too, but we don't have time, I think. I just want to try and wrap it up before I ask Apple to come and...
I just want to put a question back to the group, that's all.
Right, okay.
After all we've heard from those who have been involved with missionaries, I want to put something back now to you. Folk have listened. It's not my business, it's not man's business at all to make missionaries of anyone. That's the Lord's way. But it does concern me. Again, it's none of my business how people spend their money, how they spend their time, their work time or their free time. But we've heard from those who are out in a foreign field what a joy it is to see the faces, to have the pleasure of the company of some from the homeland. Now, it's great for a visit, but I think we could possibly do more than that. John and others who have been to these third world countries have got some little understanding now of the utter poverty, the dreadful conditions under which so many of the native Christians in these countries live, and even the missionaries have a hard time. Rather than spend the thousands that we tend to be doing on going on African safari, now that's great, to see the scenery, to get an experience of the wilds of a foreign country, to go and visit the ruins of the Inca Kingdom and in the Andes. It's tremendous. I'd love to do it myself. But really, after we've been at a company, at a gathering like this, could we not just consider that money and that time maybe better spent going with a view to those same countries, maybe, but with a view to helping the Christians, to helping the missionaries. There's not only nurses here, there's carpenters, there's plumbers, there's electricians, there's women folk. Maybe some of your training could be of use for a month, for a couple of months, or maybe much, even less than that, in sharing, in using your talents to help, whether it's the missionaries or the Christians in some way or another. Now, I've said more than I need to. Perhaps those who have been out in the field, they know something of what it's like to be there and know and realise, experience day to day these kind of needs. Maybe you could yourself give some encouragement or discouragement to any who have these sort of feelings.
Thank you. So where does that leave us all now? Well, let's just try and recap a few of the things that people have said that have come up. And I think one of the things that came out was the fact that it's not easy to live in a different culture. If you ever want to be humbled, you try and speak publicly in a language that you really don't know very well. Though you'll learn pretty quickly what about humility. It's not easy trying to assimilate into a different culture, particularly when you have to learn the language and just not to be even able to ask where is the bathroom. You know, those things are very difficult. One thing we found, I think, is that you know, missionaries aren't special people, as I said before, and God is at work in the lives of the missionaries. We tend to think that a missionary goes away and he's all primed up and, you know, he can just give out and give out and give out and he can go forever. What we found is that God has more to do in our own lives still than he's ever going to do through us. And the fact that God takes people off to a mission field doesn't mean to say that he's going to work mighty works through them, but he is doing things in them. And that's what we want, isn't it? Spiritual growth, our own spiritual growth. And if that's what it takes for the Lord to teach us, then let's go with it. There's no end of opportunities. If you think, what, you know, how could the Lord ever use me? Listen, believe me, there's no end of opportunities. We've heard how the needs in Zambia and the urban drift, the effect of the populations that are drifting into the cities all over the world. And the cities are becoming a place where there's a tremendous need for the gospel. There's endless opportunities. I just want you to put your imaginations to work and think, you know, what are some of the possibilities? Irene was at a boarding school. NK kids at a boarding school need house parents. Who's going to go and care for these kids when they can't be with their family? And there's all sorts. Who's going to teach them? You know, there's no end of opportunities available to us in the work of the Lord. But the exciting thing is this, that God, the Lord Jesus said, I'll build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. He's taking out a people for his name. And there's going to be people out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. And God has put to us the privilege of being workers together with him in this process. And this is a tremendous privilege that God's given to us. Whether we do our part here in Australia or whether he wants to send us somewhere else, the bottom line is this: am I dictating to God where he's going to put me? And I want to challenge your hearts this morning, and my heart too. Am I really prepared to do whatever God asks me to do in life? Am I really prepared to do it? Or am I putting boundaries up and saying, well, Lord, anything but please don't send me to Africa. I just want to lay that challenge with you, and there's been endless plenty of opportunity, and I want you to take the opportunity to be an encourager. And particularly for Roland and Ruth, you've got another few days here together, get alongside them and tell them, you know, we're going to follow you with interest, we're going to pray for you, make sure that you get back and tell us what you need us to pray for, and we'll do it. These things, these kind of things. Let's be workers together with God. And I think